In this mood he was by no means prepared to be accosted on the track back up to the promontory by a gentleman on horseback, of aquiline face, and by the standards of the colony elegantly dressed, who leaned from his horse and demanded,
"Am I speaking with Mr. Lawrence?"
"You have the advantage of me,"
Lawrence said, a little rudely in his own turn, but he was not inclined to regret his curtness when the man said,
"I am John MacArthur. I should like a word."
There was little question he was the architect of the entire rebellion, and though he had arranged to be appointed colonial secretary, he had so far not even given Riley the courtesy of a call.
"You choose odd circumstances for your request, sir,"
Lawrence said,
"and I do not propose to stand speaking in the dust of the street. You are welcome to accompany me to the covert, if you like, although I would advise you to leave your horse."
He was a little surprised to find MacArthur willing to hand his reins to the groom and dismount to walk with him.
"I hear you had a little difficulty in the town today,"
MacArthur said.
"I'm very sorry it should have happened. You must know, Mr. Lawrence, we've had a light hand on the rein here. A light hand, and it has answered beautifully, beyond all reasonable hopes. Our colony does not show to advantage, you may perhaps think, coming from London, but I wonder what you would think if you had been here in our first few years. I came in the year 90. Will you credit it that there were not 1,000 acres under cultivation and no supply? We nearly starved, one and all, 3 times.
He stopped and held out a hand, which trembled a little.
"They have been so since that first winter," he said, and resumed walking. "Your perseverance is to be admired," Lawrence said, "and that of your fellows." "If nothing else, that for certain sure," MacArthur said. "But it has not been by chance or any easy road that we have found success, only through the foresight of wise leadership and the strength of determined men. This is a country for a determined man, Mr. Lawrence. I came here a lieutenant, with not a lick of property to my name. Now I have 10,000 acres. I do not brag," he added. "Any man can do here what I have done. This is a fine country."
There was an emphasis on "any man" which Lawrence found distasteful in the extreme. He read the slinking bribery in MacArthur's pretty speech as easily as he had in Bligh's whispers of pardon, and he pressed his lips together and stretched his pace. MacArthur perceived his mistake, perhaps. He increased his own to match, and said, to shift the subject,
"But what does government send us? You have been a navy officer yourself, Mr. Lawrence. You have had the dregs of the prison hulks pressed into service. You know what I'm speaking of. Such men are not formed for respectability. They can only be used and managed, and to do it requires rum and the lash. It is the very understanding of the service. I'm afraid it has made us all a little coarse here, however. We are ill-served by the proportion of our numbers. I wonder how you would have liked a crew of 100, 95 of them jailbirds, and not 5 able seamen to your name. Sir, you are correct in this much. I have had a little difficulty earlier in the day,"
Lawrence said, pausing in the road. His ribs ached sharply in his side.
"So I will be frank. You might have had conversation of myself, or of Captain Riley, or Captain Granby, as it pleased you these last 3 weeks, for the courtesy of a request. May I ask you to be a little more brief?"
"Your reproach is a just one," MacArthur said, "and I will not tire you further tonight. If you will do me the kindness of returning my visit in the morning at the barracks—"
"Forgive me," Lawrence said dryly, "but I find I am not presently inclined to pay calls in this society, as yet I find the courtesies beyond my grasp."
"Then perhaps I may pay you another call," MacArthur suggested, "if with slightly pressed lips."
And to this Lawrence could only incline his head.
"I cannot look forward to the visit with any pleasure," Lawrence said, "but if he comes, we ought to receive him."
"So long as he is not insulting and does not try to put you in a quarry, he may come, if he likes,"
Temeraire said, making a concession, while privately determining he would keep a very close eye upon this MacArthur person. For his own part he saw no reason to offer any courtesy at all to someone who was master of a place so wretchedly organized and acquainted with so many ill-mannered people. Governor Bligh was not a very pleasant person, perhaps, but at least he did not seem to think it in the ordinary course of things for gentlemen to be knocked down in the street in mysterious accidents. MacArthur did come, shortly after they had breakfasted. He drew up rather abruptly, reaching the top of the hill. Lawrence had not yet seen him, but Temeraire had been looking over at the town. 16 sheep were being driven into a pen, very handsome sheep, and he saw MacArthur pause and halt, and look as though he might go away again. Temeraire might have let him do so, and had a quiet morning of reading, but he had not enjoyed his meal, and in a peevish humour said,
"In my opinion it is quite rude to come into someone's residence only to stare at them, and turn pale, and go, as if there were something peculiar in them, and not in such absurd behaviour. I do not know why you bothered to climb the hill at all, if you are such a great coward. It is not as though you did not know that I was here."
"Why, in my opinion, you are a great rascal," MacArthur said, purpling up his neck. "What do you mean by calling me a coward? Because I need to catch my breath."
"Stuff," Temeraire said roundly. "You were frightened."
"I do not say that a man hasn't a right to be taken aback a moment when he sees a beast the size of a frigate waiting to eat him," MacArthur said. "But I'm damned if I will swallow this. You do not see me running away, do you?"
"I would not eat a person," Temeraire said, revolted. "And you needn't be disgusting, even if you do have no manners."
To which Lawrence, coming around, said,
"So spake the pot," rather dryly.
He added, "Will you come and sit down, Mr. MacArthur? I regret I cannot offer you anything better than coffee or chocolate, and I must advise against the coffee."
And Temeraire rather regretfully saw he had missed the opportunity to be rid of this unpleasant visitor. MacArthur kept turning his head to look at Temeraire, and remarked, "They don't look so big from below," as he stirred his chocolate so many times it must have grown quite cold. Temeraire was quite fond of chocolate, but he could not have that either, not properly, without enough milk, and the expense so dear. It was not worth only having the tiniest taste, which only made one want more. He sighed.
"Quite prodigious," MacArthur repeated, looking at Temeraire again. "He must take a great deal of feeding." "We are managing," Lawrence said politely. "The game is conveniently plentiful, and they do not seem to be used to being hunted from aloft."
Temeraire considered that if MacArthur were here, he might at least be of some use.
"Is there anything else to hunt nearby?" he inquired. "Not, of course," he added untruthfully, "that anyone could complain of kangaroo."
"I am surprised if you found any of those in 20 miles, as the crow goes," MacArthur said. "We pretty near ate up the lot in the first few years."
"Well, we have been getting them around the Nepean River and in the mountains," Temeraire said,
and MacArthur's head jerked up from his cup so abruptly that the spoon he had left inside it tipped over and spattered his white breeches with chocolate. He did not seem to notice that he had made a sad mull of his clothing, but said thoughtfully,
"The Blue Mountains? Why, I suppose you can fly all over them, can't you?"
"We have flown all over them," Temeraire said, rather despondently, "and there is nothing but kangaroo, and those rabbits that have no ears which are too small to be worth eating."
"I would have been glad of a wombat, or a dozen, often enough, myself," MacArthur said. "But it is true we do not have proper game in this country. I'm sorry to say I know from experience. Too lean by half. You cannot keep up to fighting weight on it, and there is not enough grazing yet for cattle. We have not found a way through the mountains, you know," he added. "We are quite hemmed in."
"It is a pity no one has tried keeping elephants," Temeraire said.
"Ha, ha! Keeping elephants! Very good," MacArthur said, as if this were some sort of a joke. "Do elephants make good eating?"
"Excellently good," Temeraire said. "I have not had an elephant since we were in Africa. I do not think I have tasted anything quite so good as a properly cooked elephant. Outside of China, that is," he added loyally. "Well, I do not think they can raise them. But it seems as though this would be perfectly good country for them. It is certainly as hot as ever it was in Africa, where they raised them. Anyway, we will need more food for the hatchlings soon."
"Well, I have brought sheep, but I did not much think of bringing over elephants," MacArthur said, looking at the 3 eggs with an altered expression. "How much would a dragon eat, do you suppose, in the way of cattle?"
"Maximus would eat 2 cows when he can get them in a day," Temeraire said. "But I do not think that is very healthy. I would not eat more than 1, unless, of course, I have been fighting, or flying far, or if I were very particularly hungry."
2 cows a day, and soon to be 5 of you," MacArthur said. "The Lord safe preserve us."
"If this has brought you to a better understanding of the necessity of addressing the situation, sir," Lawrence said, rather pointedly, Temeraire thought, "I must be grateful for your visit. We've had very little cooperation heretofore in making our arrangements from Major Johnston."
MacArthur put down his chocolate cup.
"I was speaking last night, I think," he said, "of what a man can make of himself in this country. It is a subject dear to my heart,
and I hope I did not ramble on it too long. It is a hard thing, you will understand, Mr. Lawrence, to see a country like this, begging for hands, for the ploughshare and the till, and no one to work it but an army of the worst slackabouts born of woman lying about, complaining if they are given less than their day's half-gallon of rum, and they would take it at 10 in the morning if they could get it. In the corps, we may not be very pretty, but we know how to work. I believe the aerial corps, too, might be given such a character by some, MacArthur went on. And we know how to make men work. Whatever has been built in this country, we have built it. And to have a... Perhaps I had better hold my tongue. I think you have been shipmates with Governor Bligh.
I would not say we were shipmates, Temeraire put in.
He did not care to be saddled with such a responsibility.
He came aboard our ship, but no one much wanted him, only one must be polite.
Lawrence looked a bit rueful, and MacArthur, smiling, said, Well, I won't say anything against the gentleman, only perhaps he was no too fond of our ways. The which, he added, certainly can be improved upon, Mr. Lawrence, I do not deny it. But no man likes to be corrected by come lately.
When come lately is sent by the king, Lawrence said, one may dislike and yet endure.
Very good sense. But good sense has limits, sir, limits, MacArthur said. Where it comes up hard against honour, some things a man of courage cannot bear, and damn the consequences. Lawrence did not say anything. Lawrence was quite silent. After a moment, MacArthur added, I do not mean to make you excuses. I have sent my eldest son on to England, though I could spare him ill, and he must make my case to their lordships. But I will tell you, I do not tremble, sir, for fear of the answer. I sleep the night through. Temeraire became conscious, gradually, while he spoke of being poked. Emily was at his side, tugging energetically on his wingtip.
Temeraire, she hissed up to him, I oughtn't go right up with that fellow there. He is sure to see I am a girl, but we must tell the captain there is a ship come from England.
I see her, Temeraire answered, looking over into the harbour. A trim, handsome little frigate of perhaps 24 guns.
She was drawn up not far from the Allegiance, riding easily at anchor.
Lawrence, he said, leaning over, there is a ship come from England, Roland says. It is the Beatrice, I think.
MacArthur stopped speaking abruptly. Emily tugged again.
That is not the news, she said, impatient. Captain Rankin is on it.
Oh, why ever should he have come?
Temeraire said, his ruff pricking up.
Is he a convict?
Without waiting for an answer, he turned his head to the other side.
And Roland says that Rankin is here on the ship, that dreadful fellow from Lochlagan. You may certainly put him in a quarry, he added to MacArthur. I cannot think of anyone who deserves it more, the way he treated poor Levitas.
Oh, why won't you listen? Roland cried. He ain't a convict at all. He's come for one of the eggs.